Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Melanie, we're going to start with you, though, with a story about the police and a last-ditch, desperate attempt on the part of one police boss man of some sort to intimidate people into not wanting to have cannabis legalization or any kind of cannabis decriminalization. Because if you do, he's going to have to kill your dog.
Well, no, he's going to... The police do like killing your dog, but they're going to kill their dogs this time.
Oh, they're going to kill their
Apparently,
own dogs?
Apparently, they ran out of your dogs and are now going to kill their dogs.
So the threat is, if you legalize marijuana, or is this just medical? Is this for full-on legalization threat? Or?
It didn't say, so I bet it makes me inclined to believe it's recreational.
So if you legalize marijuana in Illinois... they're going to kill their own dog. Like, remember the meme with the gun next to the dog's head? And there's usually different, you know, wording. Like, if you don't join our thing, then the dog gets it. This is kind of like that, but in reverse. If you pass this law, we're going to ice our own dogs.
Wait a second. Does that mean they shoot all the officers on the narco squad, too?
Good question. Let's get into the story.
Well, no, see, the human cops, they can apparently reassign. Dogs are magic and can't be reassigned.
Right, I'll reassign one of those dogs, bring them to my house. It's obviously a tactic to pull at your heartstrings. And, you know, it's would only be tried by a manipulator of the highest order. Like, this person, before saying this, should be investigated. However, you know, going on with that, I mean, just to think about it, where are the retired police dogs that are getting, you know, put to sleep? Besides these other states that have legalized marijuana, what's happening here? This doesn't make any sense. I know that there are organizations that will allow you to adopt a retired police dog.
Are there? Because I always thought they went to live with their handler.
Usually... that's the case. Their handler gets first shot at it.
But if they don't want the dog.
And if for whatever reason their handler can't handle keeping a dog, even though they've kept a dog for years.
So they don't kill that dog. If the handler says, you know what, I don't want Buddy, you can keep him. Right. They'll find somebody else. They don't have to just put a bullet in its head or euthanize it.
There are organizations that will place Buddy. Uh-huh. But I have never, never, ever, ever heard of a police dog being put to sleep because it was being retired.
Well, let's just pretend for a second that you can't untrain a dog to alert on weed. That's not really that big of a problem in a dog. Like, the dog is not the one going in, caging people and holding people down and shitting people.
The dog doesn't care.
The dog just jumps excitedly at the car.
Melanie, you did find a couple of quotes or something else that you wanted to share from this ridiculous, outrageous story where the police in Illinois, at least one, you know, some police officer of a high rank, has stated they're going to have to kill their police dogs if cannabis is legalized in Illinois.
Yeah, so then this is from the Pantograph, which seems to maybe be the original source.
Okay.
Chad Larner, training director of the Canine Training Academy in Macon County, dismissed the idea of retraining dogs, saying it would amount to, quote, extreme abuse to change their mindset. Canines are...
Okay. Well, I don't know if it's extreme abuse, but pretty much if a dog is, you know, taught to alert on one particular thing, it's going to be a bit of a difficult thing to train them, especially if they're an older dog. But
police dogs are generally only trained for one purpose. So there's drug dogs, and then there's like body dogs.
Right.
So there are two different types of trainings.
Police attack dogs.
Right, but if you still want them to alert on cocaine or LSD or heroin or whatever, I could see how that would be challenging, but... Yeah. So if you've had a dog who's been doing this for, you know, 10 years, then maybe you just retire. It's not like they don't retire dogs ever.
Sure.
It's not like these dogs all stay whatever the human equivalent of 20 is forever.
It's a felony, right? To plant drugs on somebody?
I forget which department it was, but there was one story recently where one guy did, I think, deserve some credit for essentially pushing back against a officer.
He said something, did he?
Yeah, he did say
something.
He
didn't use the power of his badge to arrest his cohort.
No.
He just pushed back.
Well, you do that, we say something about it, because that's all we, practically speaking, can do. I mean, I'm not going to go die over it.
Of course, the officer was probably smart enough to know that he was being recorded by the very same officer's chest camera that she had on that was rolling during the entire encounter. So, maybe he wouldn't have said anything had they been off
true.
The record.
Yeah, that's true. Like, you don't... And if you're talking about the story, I think you're talking about down in Louisiana.
Maybe it was
in a parking lot.
Yeah, it was in a parking lot of a gas station.
Yeah. That struck me as a setup more than anything else.
You think they were setting the officer up?
The other cops? Not necessarily those cops in particular, but that just struck me as a setup.
Because in that case, there was a truck that had been parked in that parking lot overnight. The Speedway operators or the manager or whatever had called the police. They had come out there, and the female officer wanted to cook up a story as to justifying it. I think it was a false illegal search. Advocates in Oregon and Denver are now pushing ballot measures to allow possession of mushrooms. That is to say, the illegal kind of mushrooms. As new research is showing, it might be useful in treating depression and anxiety. Story is fresh from thedailybeast.com in the last week. In Oregon and Denver, where marijuana is legal for recreational use, activists are now pushing toward a psychedelic frontier, magic mushrooms. Groups in both states are sponsoring ballot measures that would eliminate criminal penalties for possession of mushrooms whose active ingredient, psilocybin, can cause hallucinations, euphoria, and changes in perception. They point to research showing that psilocybin might be helpful for people suffering from depression or anxiety. In fact, I know somebody who has been experimenting with mushrooms for depression and other psychedelics with what they call microdosing, meaning that the person takes an amount of these products that would not cause a psychedelic reaction, so to speak. So just whatever below that threshold is what is considered a microdose. With LSD, they say it's like a tenth of a typical dose. I'm not sure what a microdose on magic mushrooms is. It may be a little bit more than a tenth because, LSD is much more potent than mushrooms are. Quote, "We don't want individuals losing their freedom over something that's natural and has health benefits," said Kevin Matthews, the campaign director of the working group to decriminalize magic mushrooms in Colorado's capital. So apparently this is not for all of Colorado. This is just in Denver. And then also, I guess, for the entire state of Oregon, the recent failure of a nationally publicized campaign to decriminalize hallucinogenic mushrooms in California may not portend well for the psilocybin advocates in Oregon and Denver, though their initiatives are more limited than California's. The proposal in the Golden State would have decriminalized sales and transportations of magic mushrooms, not just possession. The proposed Denver law would apply only to that city, while in Oregon, mushroom use would be allowed only with the approval of a physician and under the supervision of a registered therapist.
So I've got the chart here.
Yeah.
So for instance, methamphetamine is very high with harm to users. It appears to be among the highest harm to users, right up with heroin and crack cocaine, very similar. But harm to others seems to be very, very low.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Whereas heroin and crack cocaine are significantly higher as far as societal harm.
I wonder why that would be, because you would
the
think
highest
all of
harm
those
to society is alcohol, yeah, with a lower harm to the user.
In Oregon, according to thedailybeast.com, the advocates do face a steep climb to qualify their measure for the ballot because statewide initiatives typically require hiring paid petition gatherers, according to political analysts there. But still, familiarity with recreational marijuana, and Oregon, of course, has been on board with legal cannabis since 2015, and it had medical since prior to that. I'm not sure what year they got medical in, but you know, most states go medical before they go recreational. And so they're hoping that familiarity with recreational cannabis will soften up the voters and the opponents of drug decriminalization. Well, I don't expect the opponents will be softened up, but the voters might very well be willing to make this particular move. And it'll be very interesting if this actually happens in one place. The Oregon and Denver activists.
We never thought it was going to happen in places like Colorado or Washington either, and it did.
Who never thought it would happen?
Well,
you mean cannabis legalization?
Yeah, cannabis legalization. It looks real easy from, you know, now, but it was kind of a touch-and-go kind of thing back in the day when we were looking at that particular issue. This could very well happen, and, you know, we don't know.
Taking mushrooms can lead to nausea, panic attacks, and rarely paranoia and psychosis.
It would definitely lead to nausea from what I understand.
But they generally are considered safer and less addictive than other illegal street drugs. Even so, Paul Hudson, professor of pharmacy at the University of Wisconsin, who's conducted psilocybin research, says he's wary of the drive for decriminalization. If you've ever done magic mushrooms before, you know.
I have not.
Really? Never?
No.
You know that they, Melanie?
No.
No. Okay. So They are not very tasty.
Apparently, Ian has.
Yes, oh yes, I have, and I have had psychosis as a result of it.
You've certainly had psychosis. Yeah. I'm taking you to the hospital for it.
No, it wasn't that time though. It was a different time.
But that was a different substance.
Oh, that's great.
From that story.
Yeah, that was sleep deprivation, the hospital time. But wonderful. But anyway,
I love these stories. I got to say, they aren't a colossal inconvenience to me at all.
Yeah, I know what you mean, man. Well, in that case, it was mushrooms that were way stronger than I thought they were, and I had done a half dose. Like, I was told they were strong, so like, oh, we'll cut this down to, or maybe I did a quarter dose. Anyway, I did what I considered to be a reasonable dose, but my God, they were the strongest mushrooms I'd ever eaten.
At what point are you going to decide that what you consider reasonable isn't reasonable anymore?
Well, it usually works.
Maybe you need to make a decision in
your life. This is part of the black market. This is what you get in the black market, is you get doses of drugs that are not what you expect them to be.
So it's someone else's fault. All right.
Yeah. Well, no, it's no one's fault. It's the fault of the fact that prohibition exists.
Not your fault.
Well, but at the same time, you know that you're getting an unreliable dose or an unknown dose of a product.
That's why I took like a fraction of it.
You know that going in. So, I mean, Mark kind of does have a point there, whereas, okay, you don't know what dose this is,
I did
and
know
you eat it anyway.
Right, but I ate, like, a fraction of the dose that I had. However, even psilocybin advocates share some concerns, saying, one of them saying, quote, "It's such a powerful compound, people should take it very seriously when experimenting." Unquote. These efforts to legitimize hallucinogenic mushrooms come at a time of renewed interest in the potential mental health benefits of psychedelics, including mushrooms, LSD, and MDMA, which, of course, in many people might know as ecstasy on the streets. Two small studies published in 2016 by researchers from Johns Hopkins University and New York University found that a single large dose of psilocybin combined with psychotherapy helped relieve depression and anxiety in cancer patients.
So I think it's worth trying. If a study shows that this stuff works, it's certainly worth trying with you know, people who are qualified, psychiatrists, psychologists, stuff like that. I do share the psilocybin advocates' position here that this is a powerful compound and shouldn't just be tried lightly.
Yeah, no doubt. That's true of psychedelics in general across the
board. But I don't know how to make that happen, right? Like,
how to make what happen?
Well, how to make it so that people will understand that it's a powerful compound and not
anyone who
it
tries
lightly.
It is gonna understand that.
They're
that's
gonna try
for sure.
It. They're gonna figure that out pretty
yeah.
quickly.
Yeah, there are still people who just do psychedelics on the weekend, which I think is a horrible idea.
A British company backed by Silicon Valley investor Peter Thiel plans clinical studies in 8 European countries to test the use of psilocybin for depression. Other research has examined the effectiveness of psilocybin in treating alcohol and tobacco addiction. Can you imagine if that actually, you know, pans out and it, you know, they're shown to be some real solid scientific evidence from these studies that show that using one drug could help you get off of other more addictive, more damaging drugs like alcohol or cigarettes?
I think you'd be able to figure out pretty quickly. Do the people that take psilocybic mushrooms smoke cigarettes while they're on it?
Well, it depends on what they're trying to do, right? Like, so if you are looking to have the a therapist help you quit, then again, this would be under some sort of a therapy program. It's not just somebody who's dosing on some psychedelics, smoking cigarettes at a party. You know, that's a totally different kind of goal person has.
Take your word for it.
In California, the campaign to decriminalize psilocybin was always a long shot, even though the famously liberal state legalized possession of recreational marijuana in November of 2016, and sales of that are starting this year. California ballot measures typically require about 366,000 valid signatures to qualify, and supporters usually have to spend between $1 million and $2 million just to pay the signature gatherers. A Monterey County couple leading the decrim campaign managed to collect more than 90,000 signatures for their proposal with the help of volunteers, but they halted their efforts late last month. There really aren't even that many busts. According to the story here, possessing them is generally a misdemeanor under California law, because they were talking about a ballot measure that unfortunately did not get the required signatures in California that basically would have across the board completely legalized possession, sale, and distribution and growth of magic mushrooms. They just didn't get enough ballot signatures in order to make that happen. But the state statistics on psilocybin offenses are scarce. In California, you know, the most populous state in all of the United States, there really aren't that many statistics on, like, busts for people using mushrooms. isn't to say they're not happening. It's just they're just not getting caught. But few people are even jailed for those crimes, according to analysis by the California Attorney General's office. Kitty Merchant of Marina, California, who spearheaded the psilocybin campaign alongside her husband Kevin, said, quote, "It's not a reckless community. It's experimentation with your mind and your thoughts. There's a safeness to it, and there's an intelligence to it," she said. Merchant said she and Saunders, both medical marijuana advocates, spent about $20,000 of their own money on the campaign.
Is that just to get signatures generally?
Yes.
Okay.
In Denver, Matthews and his pro-psilocybin colleagues want voters to pass a city ordinance which would eliminate criminal penalties for possessing, using, or growing magic mushrooms. City officials have cleared the measure for signature gathering, and the supporters need 5,000 signatures to get it on the ballot in November. The most important thing when it comes to using a psychedelic is that you have to be in a safe set and setting, meaning that if you're in a place where you're unfamiliar, don't do a psychedelic drug. If you're in a group of people with which you are unfamiliar or uncomfortable in some way, don't do a psychedelic drug. If you are in a mindset that is negative, do not do a psychedelic drug because that could amplify those negative feelings.
Yeah, there were some bad results from that with the CIA, who decided to slip people acid and then torture them.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, when was this?
Some time ago.
Like the 60s-ish.
Yeah, I'd imagine that would be absolutely horrifying. To be tortured while on
And then they were like, oh, look how harmful LSD is.
Yeah.
Well, no.
We broke this person's mind entirely.
Yeah, I would think that psychedelics, you probably shouldn't go swimming.
I don't know. I mean, it would depend on how strong the dose was,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
In most cases, a psychedelic isn't a party drug. It is something where, you know, you might want to go curl up
I've
in a ball.
I've heard that it's been used that way.
Psychedelics
that sounds
party drugs?
Terrifying to me, though, to just be on any psychedelic around just like a group of people.
Yeah, unless it's a group of people you really know and care about.
I don't have a whole group like that. I just have
right. Which makes me wonder: is it just terrifying the idea for you to be around a group of people? I don't know.
Well, it sounds more terrifying to be on psychedelics in a large group of people than it is to just be in a large group of people.
Damn.
When I called in Saturday, you were talking about a situation where you would be allowed to set up some situation apart from regular society where you could have an enterprise zone.
Right. These are special economic zones, and they're all around the world right now. China has quite a few of them. I know there's some in French Polynesia. Honduras just allowed, just made constitutional changes to allow this. And, so basically what they are is a place where a country suspends their legal controls to allow somebody to set up a city or a place for whatever reason. Maybe it's just a harbor, something like that, to be able to sort of do business and, make jobs and that kind of thing.
So you're saying that they're going to do the same thing here in the United States, right?
No, I don't think they can do that in the United States. I don't think the United States would ever would go for it.
Okay, well, I was just confused actually when you said that because it had been tried before. I remember the Branch Davidians set up a situation where they had their cult with their enterprise zone, and some teenage female escaped and accused the leader of sexual perversity, and then
I don't think
Santa
that's the
Frito,
same thing.
If you go anywhere in the world as an American, all you're going to be is exploited and taken advantage of because they really don't need you. And whatever technical skill that you might have, they will have you to train somebody to do that, and then you will be expendable. I had a friend that stayed in Beijing for about 10 years as a translator, but after his stay was up, and he was trying to act a little uppity and Americanize the Chinese people, and you know that they locked him in one of their black op jails and deported him. So
That's everywhere. Anywhere where your job becomes redundant, they're going to fire you. That's not special to immigration.
Here's the secret to moving to other countries in the world, Larry. You don't get a job in the country in which you move to, ideally. You should be able to move your trade. So, like, Melanie, you could probably do tax advice from outside of the United States. You could probably remote consult with people over an internet connection and make money at that. You know, Mark, you can host a radio show from anywhere in the world. Okay. So if you have a career that you can move anywhere, then you don't have to rely on some corporation, you know, giving you work in that other country.
But I'm also I'm frightened about that, too, because I know that these apps and so forth that you use to facilitate your business or whatever, they will find about your business and then just set up a duplicate business, and your connection ain't going to be that good anymore.
I just went on a Ridley rampage today and did a huge slew of ambush interviews. I did four demonstrations, all in Concord. And I just by accident sort of, you know, popped out of the state house after doing some ambush interviews, and just by coincidence, in front of me were a bunch of people blocking the street preparing to get arrested.
Really? Over what?
It's there's some sort of nationwide Martin Luther King type thing, the campaign for the poor or something like that.
Really? Okay. Tell me more.
So I got some pretty good video of that, but at the end of it, you know, I talked to one of the demonstrators or one of the organizers. I said, you know, of all the things to get arrested for, like, there are over 200,000 pages of listed of things that you're not allowed to do in the United States. You don't have to get you don't have to go into the street and block people off to get arrested. There's plenty of other things that I'll be just as happy to take your picture, you know, getting arrested for anything else.
Right.
Just like this. But they said, well, we need to, you know, we need to get people to stop and think. And I said, look, for God's sake, there are laws that stop you from helping the poor. Why don't you break one of those?
You've been out with me, Melanie, at various different events over time. I remember specifically NH Exit. There were some secessionist sign wavings that we did here in the Keene area. And it doesn't really matter what the issue is, whether it be, you know, helping the poor, or whether it be protesting for secession or ending marijuana prohibition or whatever the issue is, people are going to hate you just because you're there with a sign on the side of the road.
Right.
If you want to guarantee even more people hate you.
Oh, yeah, you're going to be hated. Just do anything. Like, it doesn't matter.
But my point is, if you want to guarantee everyone on the road hates you, then stand in the road and block them all from getting to where they're going. Because the people who would have honked for you will now hate you.
Well, yeah, and now I can't even, like, do what you want me to do, because then I'd be encouraging that behavior. So, yeah.
I've done this peace vigil stuff out on Central Square in Keene, New Hampshire.
Where they have the anti-war event every Saturday?
One of the longest-running anti-war events in the country.
Since the 80s, right?
Early 90s.
Okay.
And I can only imagine if we went out into Central Square and actually blocked traffic.
You mean into the into the street.
Into the street and blocked traffic. It's one thing. Usually there's one or two people that'll go by and they like shake their fist, or maybe they'll come by and say something. It's really funny to hear them talk about how you hate veterans, and most of the people at the protest are veterans.
Korean War veterans and things like that.
Korean, Vietnam. There's a World War II veteran there that still goes out and protests against United States intervention.
It is always amusing to see people counter-protest peace.
There's apparently a protest that has been going on today where Dave had called in about it. He just happened to run into this in Concord today, and I hadn't heard about it, so this is the first that we've talked about it. From HuffingtonPost.com, headline, "Hundreds protest in cities across the U.S. for Poor People's Campaign." Now, hundreds isn't really it's not a really big
hundreds
protest.
Just think about this, ladies and gentlemen. Hundreds protest in cities.
Right.
Across the U.S.
Yeah.
So
protests are impressive when you get to thousands if you're talking about across the U.S. But
yeah, there were tens of thousands of people that worked in the building that I worked in when I lived in a city. So
if 15 people in 15 cities protested, then you would have, what is that, 300 people?
Well, in this case, the folks over at Huffington Post do link to a quote or a Twitter from Fight for 15 saying that 300 marchers took part in civil disobedience in D.C. Today. So, you know, and when I see a few dozen people at a protest, I consider it a success. But, you know, that's because I'm coming from the libertarian perspective, where getting more than a handful of people out is a win. But anyway, hundreds of people took to the streets today as part of a new movement to challenge racism and poverty in America.
Somebody who works, you know, needs to negotiate a wage, and in all likelihood, right now, with the employment rate being the lowest it's been in many, many years here in the United States, you're going to be able to negotiate yourself a pretty good wage if, I don't know, you speak English fluently, you can show up to work on time, there's no heroin needles hanging out of your arm, you've got a haircut and you bathe that day.
So, and a lot of these jobs that they're demanding it for just aren't worth what they're demanding, but what would happen in the free market is that those jobs wouldn't exist. So, which I know is kind of...
What do you mean that jobs wouldn't exist?
So, in the free market, without a state, if you want to hire someone to work full-time, you have to pay at least enough to keep a human alive. Mm-hmm. And if you're not paying that much, your employers are going to die. So what companies are kind of allowed to do is have the state subsidize their workforce.
This is something like big companies that you know, pay very low wages. Many of their employees are on food stamps and WIC and other sort of welfare services.
Yeah, so as far, like, as far as I'm concerned, Walmart is probably on food stamps. I haven't
There are people who say that is not
true. Delved into the raw data on that. But then at the same time... So that is an issue. So, like, if you're paying someone not enough to support a single adult, then you are being subsidized by whatever else it is that they're on.
I just heard Melanie say something like, well, if an adult is not receiving a minimum wage, they're going to starve to death. And
no, I did not say that.
Well, you... close to that. What did you say?
You said the jobs wouldn't exist.
I said that if a job is not paying enough to keep one adult human alive, then they're not going to... Then it, in the free market, it wouldn't exist because your employees would just be dying.
Well, they wouldn't stay. They're going to go someplace to earn money.
Well, yeah. I mean, but I think that there are many, many circumstances where there is less than a full need for a wage to cover someone, where there's a family and there's additional, you know, workforce there to fill in, in a lower skilled realm where they can be an apprentice and they can be a learner.
Well, plus one adult doesn't have to, you know, one person doesn't have to rent an entire house all for themselves.
Well,
too,
I didn't. So. Well, you don't need an entire house to not die. I said enough to stay not dead.
All she's saying is that that the market will set an effective minimum wage.
Just real quick here about the Walmart thing, since I said we were going to mention it. The claim being that there are so many Walmart employees that are on food stamps, according to the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. According to investors.com, this is Lonnie Shepard from that union who writes that according to a 2014 report by Americans for Tax Fairness, Walmart receives an estimated $6.2 billion in subsidies every year, primarily from the federal government. If Walmart would only pay its workers more, the argument goes, taxpayers would save all this money. The USA Today editors apparently didn't bother to look into an ATF report before publishing their piece, so we did. The ATF, a coalition of union and liberal advocacy groups, that's Americans for Tax Fairness, based its findings on a 2013 report written by Democrats on the House Education and Workforce Committee. In other words, none of these sources is objective by any means. House Democrats based their findings on data from one state, Wisconsin.